I'll just go ahead and start.
Is it
coming
out okay? Like, could you have a discussion last week?
Oh, we can pull the chairs away from there.
That's all
right. You sure?
I'll sit here.
Thanks.
Okay.
You're sinking that one a little more. On that side of that one, particularly.
I don't know.
Oh, that one.
Does that look familiar? Yeah. Just without the corner piece, you know.
I see.
Yeah. The corner piece is long gone.
Why? I didn't know that made it.
Yep.
I had that bachelor pad.
That's right.
We need to drink a little bit there.
That's right.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Oh, you brought my folder for you.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Would you like to share?
The same department?
Everybody?
Is that where you're
no.
All right, well, it's good to see everybody this morning. Glad everybody is here again, and we're going to get started. Now, I'm going to lead a prayer to get us started, but I know Allison had something big that she, I guess, wants to share this morning. And yeah.
I had a job offer this week in Jellicoe, Tennessee, which is a small town an hour north of Knoxville on 75, and I started 3 weeks. So, January 10th, I will be a practicing PA. So, yeah. I'm excited, but it's a lot to do in 3 weeks. I didn't realize it was this soon until I looked at the calendar a couple of days ago.
So, let's all pray for Allison. I know that's a big, you know, she's been looking in. So, great opportunity for her.
Sorry.
Down over there. Great opportunity for her, but it's also going to be hard for us being, you know,
she's our missionary to Jellicoe.
Yeah, they're at Jellicoe. So, you know, from a selfish standpoint, we're going to miss, you know, I'm going to we wish you the best. Okay, so, but 3 more weeks. Okay. All right. So, need any help moving or anything?
Okay.
Just let us know. Anybody else have anything they want to pray for this morning?
Jerry Morgan. Is the Army know Jerry Morgan is moving to Nashville next week or so. We may need a little help. I don't know if anybody can help. They're moving their furniture and everything as soon as things are ready at the house. So we pray for them as they make this transition.
Do they have a house?
They're going to stay in the bachelor pad.
Oh, the bachelor pad.
So it won't be a bachelor pad now. It'll be something else.
Yeah. We called it the bachelor pad when me and Sam lived there, so it's still what it is.
It was
yeah.
Just the house.
So, hey, Kathy.
Good to see you, Mr.
Mm-hmm. I have a chair. Anybody else?
Let me say one other thing.
Sure.
I don't know if you remember, Vinay. We mentioned this in our Wednesday night class, but he recently received a over $5,000 donation for his work there, and so we want to thank the donor who is
anonymous at this point, but he could really kind of use that for the support of the ministers there. He said it's really going to be a great blessing for him, and that's kind of what he's got a earmark for,
mm-hmm.
a couple of ministers.
Yeah.
Okay, nobody else has anything? Let's bow. We pray to God and start. Our God and Father in heaven, God, we thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. We truly are thankful for that, for allowing us to come here safely and be here in this warm building and enjoy this time of learning about you, learning what your will is for us and our finances, and discussing with one another some of these things. And Father, we pray that you would be with us in this class this morning, that we would open up and open up our hearts and have a good discussion this morning. Father, I want to pray specifically that you would be with Vinay and his work that he is doing in India. We're so thankful for his heart and his ability and all that he does with his family to spread the gospel in that area. And we're thankful for the donation that has been made. And we just pray that you would be with Vinay as he has kind of been put in charge of distributing these funds to different ministers around the area, that you would just allow the best use to come of that money. God, we want to pray that you would be with Jerry and Mickey as they are moving their family from Missouri to Tennessee, and we know this is going to be a big change in their lives, and we just pray that you would be with them as they are in this transition, and that the move would go smoothly, and that as they are looking for jobs and starting new jobs, pray that you would be with them all the way. Father, we're so grateful this morning for Allison and the job offer that she has been given. We know that she is excited about that, and help us to be excited for her and rejoice as she rejoices, and just pray that transition will go smoothly as well as she moves away, and let us be here to support her in every way that we can. Father, again, we pray that you would now open up our hearts as we look in your word and try to apply the things that we learn into our lives. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen. All right. So, when I started this class, one thing that I was thinking about as far as, you know, how I wanted the class to go is kind of looking at certain topics that have to do with our finances and trying to keep up a little bit of momentum as far as, you know, not... We want to cover topics thoroughly, but not stay on topics too long to where it just kind of drags on, you know. And so, you know, I was going to look at doing a topic one per week or maybe every 2 weeks or whatever. But and so last week we started looking at contentment, and which is a big part of finances as a Christian, as being content. And so I had several comments after class last week that, you know, it might be a good topic that we talk about again. And I certainly didn't get through all my notes last week. And I do have other notes and things that I could discuss this morning. But I think I was thinking about the class, and it seemed like a lot of people had a lot of comments last week. And I don't know, you know, if everybody got to say everything they wanted to say. So, you know, instead of me going through the rest of the notes that I had, I think it would be good if we, you know, kind of open up and say some things. So I have some things to kind of get us started in our discussion this morning, and I think it would be really good. I think last week's discussion was good, and I actually learned a lot from that. I learned quite a bit from just hearing what you guys have to say too. So what I want to do this morning is pose several questions, all having to do with contentment, and so I'm just going to say them right back to back to back, and that way you can be thinking about them as we're talking. And one thing that I would encourage you to do is to take notes about the discussion today. I think that would be really good. And I think it would be good to write down some of the things that we're learning from each other and praying about those things this week so that, you know, that we can support each other, but also that we can use the things that we're learning in this class and, you know, not just make it something that we're talking about on Sunday morning, but also something that we're thinking about throughout the week and trying to implement into our lives. And so, you know, if you have a pen or a paper or whatever, just I'd encourage everybody to jot some things down that are said this morning that you can remember this week. So, to get started, before I list out these several questions, I wanted to kind of give us some of the context of what our discussion was last week. And again, this is out of my memory, so I hope that I can portray everybody's thoughts correctly. And if I don't, then just correct me. It's no problem. But some of the things that were said were, well, Eric and Don aren't here this morning. But Eric mentioned, you know, he was trying to draw the line. He was trying to make his boundary between what is enough, how much to provide. You know, being the man in the house, we discussed that too, which we'll get to in a second. But, you know, where is enough? And if I'm going beyond that, is that just too much? You know, where is that line? It's kind of the what Eric mentioned. Sarah had a good point that, you know, like in class last week and in life in general, sometimes we talk about and we think a lot about the possessions themselves, you know, the things that we own, the things. But she mentioned, you know, really what it comes down to is your heart. And I think that the things that we own are truly show what's in our heart, but also, I mean, just, I think her point was mainly we need to focus on where is our heart when it comes to these things, comes to possessions and contentment. Jared pointed out a study that, you know, he was in school to be a counselor, and so they looked at a lot of different studies and that kind of thing, and he pointed out there was a study that was done that, how did it go? The women would have rather the men work less, maybe make a little bit less, so that there could be more time with the family, more things at home, you know, or more time for the husband to have with the children and the wife and that kind of thing. And let's see, was there anything else for that study? Yeah, they would have been happy to take more of a pay cut. And I think there were others that, you know, could see where he was coming from with that study, but also that would, if that was the case, that they were going to stay home and make less, that it would take a lot on the wife's part to actually live up to that, you know, to be able to accept the lower standard of living, if you will, and live on less, you know, and it would just, it would take a lot of effort on the wife's part too, and support from the wife in order to do that. Rich made a comment. Where'd you go? Rich made a comment about the difference between needs and wants, and how, you know, you brought up how your sons would sometimes say, "Oh, I need this," and you said, "No, you want that." And you know, that our needs are primarily, we need basic clothing, we need shelter, roof over our head, and we need food. And beyond that, you want, if I understand what Rich was saying. And Jimmy brought up how, you know, sometimes when we buy things, it requires more of us to maintain the things. He mentioned his pool. And, you know, his grandchildren love the pool, and I think that's why he said he mainly does it is for the grandchildren, but it takes a lot to maintain it and a lot of time and a lot of, you know, money. There's costs involved in it, and it's true. Anything, the more stuff we have, the more we have to, it's just more to maintain, more to handle, more to replace, you know, whatever. And also, to add to that, I was thinking kind of when he was saying that last week that it can change, the things that we buy can change our priorities. For instance, like if we buy a boat, this is just, and nothing against buying boats, I don't think there's anything against boats, but if you go out and buy a boat, then you have to justify that purchase by spending time using the Pope, you know, and, you know, well, I bought this thing, now I need to, you know, I need to go out on Saturday and whatever, take time, could be with my family or whatever. Not to say that, you know, you have to work that out, but it, just by purchasing that, it can change your, what you do with other aspects of your life, like time and that kind of thing. We also talked about last week that it's, you know, we looked at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. It's mainly the guy's responsibility in the family. It's primarily our responsibility to provide for the family. That's the verse that talks about if anyone does not provide for his own family, he has become worse than, what does it say? He has become an unbeliever. And so, and I think that we kind of talked about this too. I don't know how much we talked about this, but, you know, for us guys, sometimes internally we rate how well we're providing for our family by how far we go above and beyond what we need. You know, we really think we're doing a really good job if we have a nice big house, or have the nice cars, or, you know, have the nicer clothes. You know, we kind of internally, it's kind of our tendency to rate ourselves. Maybe I'm just talking about myself, but, you know, I think guys can fall into that. We take a lot internally about if we're providing well for our families, then we're going to have all these things. But I think what's important for us to realize boundaries, like Eric was saying, you know, between knowing what's enough and then just trying to supply beyond that and just giving our family an overabundance. And also last week we talked about the difference in today's generation and the time we live in now versus the time, you know, just the one generation ago that grew up in the mid-1900s, how, you know, people got by with, made do with one car, smaller homes, less things, and comparing that to now with all that we have, and would we be content to have just the things that they had back then in our lives now? Would that be enough for us now? That brought up the point that, you know, a lot of those things that they didn't have, just having the smaller home, the one car, had a lot to do with also the fact that the wife or the mother in most cases didn't work, you know, and sometimes the wife would work, just if circumstances. I was talking to Dad a couple weeks ago, and I didn't bring this up last week, but they moved from Montana to South Dakota, and at some point during that, my granddad got sick, and so my grandmother, he lost his job, right? He lost his job. Did he get sick as well?
Well, he lost his job. It didn't help his health. But that wasn't the reason he lost his job.
Okay, gotcha. So grandmother had to work. You know, and so sometimes there's situations where the wife needs to work. But overall, back in that time, they did not. The wife stayed home and just survived on the husband's income, and so therefore they had less. And so, you know, with some of these things in mind, the context of last week's discussion, and you know, I want to pose a few questions to us this morning, and you know, if you have anything in your heart you want to say, just feel free, and we'll get some of these things out. Oh, also about that. During that time, Rich made a comment. It wasn't during class, it was after class. He told me that one of the big things that changed was when television came into homes and there was constant advertisement. You know, you were seeing on a daily basis, these are the things you need. You know, you need these things to be happy. You know, first, and so people started thinking, well, what are the things that I need next? Well, okay, we'll get a dishwasher, and then after that, we'll go to Chevrolet, and then after that, you know, whatever the advertisements were for, and so people started seeing these things and thinking they need these things, and so I think that's kind of when more more families had two incomes, you know, the wife started working and just to provide for these extra things. Is that correct assessment? So with these things in mind, I'd like us to look at a few questions. One question, do men in this time make enough to supply the needs that we have? Or are the women working, you know, and like I said, sometimes it's just whatever your family situation is, the woman might need to work. And a lot of times, are the women working just to get those extra things? You know, if we were to draw back our lifestyle some, would we be able to live on just what the guys make? That's one thing you can think about and tell me what you think. Another question I'd like to ask is, what does a content life look like? Living a content life, what things would that consist of? Another thing, are there any steps that we can start taking now to live more modestly and be more content living on less? Are there some things and some, is there a direction that we can start going in our lives to live like that? Also, we looked at, I think it was 1 Timothy 6 last week, that said, you know, there is great gain to be had in contentment. With contentment, there's great gain. And I think he's definitely talking about spiritual gain, not necessarily physical gain. But there's definitely spiritual gain to be had living contently. So with that said, you know, what are some spiritual blessings that can come from living content lives? So those are some of the things that I'd like to discuss this morning. And I can start us off. As far as that last question goes, some spiritual blessings that we gain from living contently. Honestly, I've got to brag on Samantha. And I just really appreciate her because, you know, as a guy, she never puts pressure on me to have more and better, and, you know, there's no kind of pressure like that. I feel like God has blessed us and you know, has definitely provided above and beyond our needs, but there's never any pressure. You know, there's never, you know, y'all know what we drive. There's no pressure to have a nicer car or whatever. Not that a new car wouldn't be a bad thing necessarily, but, you know, for anything, you know, that she doesn't pressure me to have bigger clothing allowance or you know, clothing in our budget. Whatever. I mean, she is content. In our marriage, some of the spiritual blessings that we've gained from that are definitely peace. There's more peace and joy at the home because I'm not, you know, in order to provide these extra things, I'd have to really focus more on the business, and it would cause more stress and that kind of thing. And so peace and joy, and it's created more of an atmosphere of where love can grow because there's no resentment. You know, and these things, love and peace and joy, what do they sound like? That sounds like the fruit of the Spirit, you know? And those things are things that we need to have in our lives. And so, I don't know. Anybody have any comment?
I'm going to go back a little bit, though. Children. And, of course, especially raising children, it's not an easy job. You don't get a book. I'll tell you how to do that. But I wrote down here, do children expect more? And I think they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the other thing I wrote down there was peer pressure. That's one of the reasons they expect you know, so-and-so, their friend, they get this or that or whatever. Even the clothes they wear, I mean, the teachers here see that at school, you know. One wears something, the other one wants something. That's how the fads come along. It's because somebody's got something. You know, you buy these blue jeans now that's got holes in them, they cost you 50, 60 bucks. You know, I always think.
It took us 3 years.
Huh?
It took us 3 years to get to that level.
Yeah.
Well,
but the deal is they have those pressures on them to have those things, and then they pressure their parents to have those things. I like what Rich said last week when he was talking to his children, and he said the needs and the wants, because that's true. I don't think I ever went through that, but then I had a mother that raised us, okay? She raised two boys by herself from the time I was 10 years old, and I didn't feel that. I had everything I needed, you know. I never wanted for anything. I had food, clothing, shelter, you know, all that stuff. I didn't have a lot of material things, some, but I think our kids today are under a lot more pressure than I ever was under, okay? Somebody, you know, it's like, well, I turned 16, I got to have a car. You know, I got to have a car. That's just expected because everybody else got a car. And somehow, as parents, I think we need to get across to them that, you know, they don't have to have that. And maybe mother and daddy can't afford that. You know, kids are just like adults when you talk about getting jobs and so forth. They want a car. So you say, well, if you want a car, then you got to pay for it. Well, okay, so that means they got to get a job. Okay, so that detracts from their schooling because they're having to work every day to maybe get the car and put the gas in it and put the insurance on it and all that kind of stuff. And my granddaughter's living with us, and she's turned 16. You know, I told her, I said, you can't afford a car. She said, what are you talking about? I said, you can't put the gas in the car. I mean, gas is what? Fill up at the pump and on the car, it's going to run you $30 to $40 a week. You know, unless she's got a job. She can't support that. Anyway, those are ideas I have.
Yeah, but you don't start when you're 16.
Oh, I know.
You have to get that early enough in their life to get them to understand that. Because they won't understand it, but you have to work on it constantly so they're used to hearing it. That you don't need that. Just because everybody else has that doesn't make it a good thing.
Right.
Because
my problem was I didn't get her till she was 16. That made a little bit of difference.
A lot of us want to start too late. You know, but suddenly it's like, I need to look. By that point, it's ingrained in, I gotta have. Because you've been giving everything they wanted. Once you start that, you can't get away from it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And
isn't it interesting? What was the one commandment that God gave in the Ten Commandments that he was very explicit about? All the rest of them were one word. What was the one that he made a whole paragraph out of?
I shall not covet.
I shall not covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's house, your neighbor's ox. Why did he have to go into such detail? Because they're going to look for that loophole and say, well, you didn't say, just like your kids, right? Well, you didn't say I couldn't do that. That's the one thing God said. Thou shalt not covet. That's exactly what our entire society is based on.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, I bring that up because we have young people here who either have children or will have children. And you're right. It has to be from the time they're born that you have to instill these things in them, that they can't have everything, and also a work ethic, you know? So, I mean, I never thought anything about the fact that I had to work around my house. My mother told me, on Saturday, you're going to do this. I just did them, you know? And if you get them in that habit from the time they're real small, I got a great grandchild. I have never seen so many toys. And Christmas is coming up, and there's no telling how many toys. She can't get them all in the room.
Well, sometimes that's not the child's fault.
That's
the
I'm saying.
Yeah, the grandparents. Or the grandparents. I find with, mine are six, ours are 16, almost three. And it is hard. It's hard as a parent not to want them to have. And right now, Kayla could care less what she gets for Christmas. We put the idea in her head what she wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to watch yourself. You have to know what your limits are in order to teach your children what their limits are.
Instead
of
so readily available.
Yeah, and everybody's got one.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hard as a parent to not want your child to have what everybody has, you know. Even though I know the difference between wanting to use. And we don't live lavishly. I mean, we're not driving brand new cars, we're not living in a fancy house. And I'm fine with all that. I don't need anything. But there's something about wanting your children to have the best or whatever. My parents didn't care. They made me get a job.
Yes, they did care.
But I mean, when I wanted Nike tennis shoes, I could have tennis shoes, but I had to work to get Nike tennis shoes. You know, you can have tennis shoes from Woolco or wherever, but if you want the brand, you better think about how you're going to afford those. You know, we had it. We had what we wanted. If we worked for it, we had what we needed always, and we were happy. Mm-hmm. We were happy kids. I could play with a cardboard box and be a happy kid.
Yeah. I thought about that too. The commercial about the little kid that bought the present. She's playing with the box. Yeah. You know, I used to keep a box at my house when my grandkids came over. Mm-hmm. I did, and I'd drag out the box, and they'd have more fun with that box, which didn't cost me anything. You know, they'd have a house in it or whatever, but just the box. A lot of times we don't think about that. We think that they want this, that, but a lot of times they're happy with the box.
Yeah.
So
I think that whole situation, like Rich is talking about, the early training or whatever, they don't get that by you sitting down and telling them all these things. They get it by seeing it in their parents and in the approach they have to the things they have and the importance they place in the home, on the things versus the spiritual things and the things that really are important. What we're talking about is contentment. The contentment, if they see that in their parents, that they don't have very much, and that whatever they are getting for their kids is really a sacrifice, which used to be maybe more than it is now, I don't know, you don't see it as much now, then that is the way they learn, not just by telling them a bunch of stuff. And another thing I thought of, Chris, while you were talking, was today it seems like that the parents almost live a double life. You have a career for the mother and a career as a father. I'm not saying you can't make that work, but I'm saying it's a temptation there. Not for the money particularly, but for their own, that's their contentment. That's where they're looking for the contentment, is in the career. Men have that naturally, I think, in a lot of sense, in order to, I don't know why, but a lot of times we have in the past been the ones who were the heavy career seekers. But now it's the women as well. And so when you have these two career seekers, where's the family? And what do the children see? And we don't have as much time, so we give them things to make, you know, I love you, but I don't have time to, you know, invest here because I'm pursuing my career. Maybe I'm seeing that wrong, but it seems like to me in a lot of cases, that is, you know, the contentment is, they're seeing their parents find contentment in something else besides the family relationship and the spiritual relationship.
I was kind of talking about that last night, Papa. I worked myself, you know, so I'm not against moms working, but I think it's sad how much, as a woman, you know, even if it's aside from, you know, when I got a job, went to college, got a job, I wasn't thinking, oh, yeah, I have a job so we can have this. You know, I wasn't thinking that, but there's just so much said and unsaid pressure for women nowadays to go to college, get a job, and if you intend to be a stay-at-home mom or whatever, you're almost looked down upon. And thankfully, I think that's becoming more, there are more stay-at-home moms and moms that, you know, work part-time or whatever, you know, to have time with their kids, but there's so much pressure, and as a woman, if you choose not to do that, not to pursue a career or whatever, you feel so demoralized and demeaned, and like you're, you know, you don't know anything, you know, and it's very hard as a woman to, I love my role, I'm not saying it's hard to take on this role, but there are things that come along with it from the general public that, you know, don't, you know, they look at you in a different light because you do this, or, you know, when in reality,
But are we a part of the world, or are we supposed to be apart from the world? Mm-hmm. Are we supposed to be like everybody else?
But, you know, we're looked at, you know, most people, when you go, you're looked at to go to college,
mm-hmm.
male and female, you're looked at. As you're expected to go to college. Well, what's the point in college? Well, it's to find a career, male and female. It's generally not, it used to be more male-oriented than it was, and now, I mean, I get this all the time in my office when women are at home. I've got a best friend right now that's home with twins, brand new newborn twins, and she is about to die because she's ready to go back to work. And I'm like, they're 5 weeks old. I've got to get out of this house. I've got to get back to work. And it just, you know, it's pre-calculated what she's going to do, my career, you know, I've worked so hard, and that's what she said, I worked so hard to get this far in my career, you know, 3 more weeks and they'll be in daycare. And I'm not opposed to daycare, but I'm just taken back that, you know, you're not
just
savoring every moment, you know, at home with those babies. And you know, I don't know, because I know, I mean, I've got a career, too. Can't stand it at this moment. But at the same time, you know, it's so hard when you're a female. You know, I'll tell you right now, when somebody asks me, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I homeschool my kids. You know, I'm at home, and they look at me, and then I say, well, I have a master's degree in psychology.
Oh yeah.
And then I'm important.
Yeah.
I have this big, fat diploma that hangs on my wall. That, you know, I have some clout. You know, but it's so funny. You say, I homeschool my kids. We have chickens. We have this. Oh, you're just like a farm hick. But I have a master's degree. Then you just watch it just flip over and change. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if I feel like I'm just underhanded, I just flip off the diploma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look what I got. You know, that I still haven't paid for. I'm in debt. But I owe it till I die. But, you know, but that is, it's a lot. I totally agree. There's a lot of pressure, female-wise, on, you know, do you really, you know I count. I know that if I don't have a good influence on those kids, Abby's birthday was yesterday. We got her one gift, $20. That was it. That's what she asked for. We got one gift, and she was tickled to death with it. My brothers and sister-in-law spent more money on my child than I did. She went straight to that one thing that she had asked for and was tickled to death. I said, did you have a good birthday? Yes, Mom, I had a great birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, we didn't go out and spend $100 on this and $100 on that. And it really does help that Christmas is next week. But, you know, it just, but it's, I've really tried, and this class has helped. You know, I was like, this child does not need to go out. She does need new socks and underwear. That's like I have to. But other than that, you know.
You know, some women do have to work outside the home in order to have a home.
Yeah.
Because it is more expensive to live nowadays. My wife, I worked in the daytime. She worked at nighttime. So she was with the kids in the day until I got home. She usually had supper ready, and she walked out the door. Well, then I was with the kids until about 10 o'clock when she got home. And that kind of worked for us. But there are instances where that happens. Now, for the husbands, if that wife is working out there, don't sit in your recliner watching television, okay? My wife still works 2 days a week. But, you know, I could sit there and not do anything all day long, but that's not right. That's not right for my wife. So, I cook. I put the dishes in the dishwasher. I take them out of the dishwasher. I clean the kitchen. You know, whatever I can do for my wife, I do that. I have done the laundry. You know, it doesn't make any difference. She's out there working. I hate she has to go out there and do that. But right now, we got to pay for the roof and the gutters and all that we had to put on the house. So she's still out there. But some husbands have the idea, I got a brother-in-law like this, that he don't do anything. I mean, she waits on him hand and foot, and she works. That's not right. It's just not. So that's just for the men's sake.
By the way, what I was saying was not against women working. That's not what I was talking about. But I'm saying that the priority, necessity comes in there, of course.
One of the things Johnny and I have been talking about a lot is, you know, both of us work. And, I mean, sometimes my days are a lot longer than his, and he has to wait on me to get done at school and stuff. But one of the things we've talked about a lot is how fast-paced our life is and how we always feel like we have to be doing this and doing that, and how many different things we're involved in. And so that all these things that we have at the house, we never spend time with. We never do anything at home because we're never home. And we don't get to cook, and we don't get to, you know, and it's things that we bring on ourselves. And we don't realize it until we're caught up in the middle of it. And like this past week, I mean, by the time Friday came, we were dead. We were done. And we had been doing something every night last week. And I know the holidays come, and we got extra things involved in that and stuff, but some of those things were our choice, and we chose to go out and do things, and it's like, we don't need to spend money to go do this when we can go home and enjoy each other's company there, too. And our generation, our world is so fast-paced and so instant gratification, gotta have this, gotta have that, and gotta have it now, that we lose sight of why we have a home. I mean, we have a home to spend time at home. We have food in our pantries to eat at home. And we've made a lot of decisions lately about how, like, we have some hockey tickets and we only got a few games this season or whatever, but it's one of those things that's not needed. We don't have to go. We don't have to go spend money there or do that. We can go home and spend time together there. And that's part of those first steps to contentment, is enjoying each other and not having to have all those activities outside of your home, but be able to stay at home and find things at home that you can enjoy. I mean, part of contentment is being happy with what you have. I mean, that is, I mean, the main part. I mean, but if we can't find the things of what we bought to enjoy, then we shouldn't have them. I mean, we get so caught up in going and doing everything else and going and buying the next big thing when what we just bought last week is still sitting there waiting for us to use and waiting to be enjoyed. And I think a lot of that is a reflection back on yourself inside your own home. What is here that I can spend my time with? What do I have already that I can do something with? And if you can't find something in your home, then that's your issue. That's you that has an issue, not with the stuff that you have, but you as an individual. If you can't enjoy the things that are in your home as they are right now, then you're the one that needs to reflect back on yourself and why can't I enjoy my home? Why can't I enjoy what I
need to do to make it?
Yeah.
Why can't
I? Think going along with that too, Samantha and I, one thing that we've wanted for a long time, ever since we've been married, and I've wanted it even longer than that, is I have wanted land. You know, I've always wanted to have a house, you know, not necessarily a big house or anything, but just a house on some land. And so, you know, land is expensive. And so we bought the house we're in now, but, you know, still kind of with the intention that, yes, we'll live here, but then we'll be working toward getting land and then having a house on it and all that kind of thing. And as I've been looking more at this, and we've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, it's just, it, like you're saying, we're not enjoying what we have right now, because we're looking for, in our case, we're looking forward or looking toward having this other that we want, you know. And so we've really just come to the conclusion that, well, there's a couple things that we don't need that. We don't have to be working that direction. That's just going to put more stress, really, in our lives to work that direction to get, you know, I'd have to make more money or, I mean, something in order for us to do that. And
believe
and
me,
she might have to work and
throwing land out the door. I grew up on 10 acres. Mm-hmm. I was used to being secluded. I'm not used to having people 5 feet, you know, away from me.
So, but, you know, we've determined that the house that we have is definitely more than, it's just, we're grateful to have it. And we've determined that we definitely don't need to be looking that way. And I've been struggling with, is the house we have even too nice? You know, and so, but I think we've determined that, you know, we have some room to grow into in the house, and we intend to grow into the house, and we can just stay there and just not put these pressures on ourselves. And so, you know, just be content with where we are and not have to build up. I think there was a comment last week about building up. You know, you start at this house and you build up to this house and then.
And you go the opposite way.
Yeah, what was wrong with the first one?
Yeah, exactly.
Because Minerva and I have thought about downsizing.
Yeah.
Because, and we love our house and we thoroughly enjoy our home, okay? I've got my man cave, whatever you want to call it, back there. Minerva's got her sewing room back there, you know, and we enjoy the house. But at some point, at our age, we're going to get to where we can't take care of that house. It's too much. I mean.
Well, and your kids grew up there, right?
No, my kids didn't grow up there. My kids grew up on Edgemead, which was a smaller home. And if I was still living at Edgemead, it would have been paid for 20 years ago. And I'm still paying on the one I got. But at some point, you do downsize. Some of the questions you ask, do men make it up? Well, that might depend on the wife. There are two circumstances, I think. Number one is the wife. Is she getting what she thinks she wants? So is he making enough money to provide those things? And we're not talking about needs there, we're talking about wants. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is the economy and all. There might be a very legitimate reason for that wife out there. They're working. So I think that there's two reasons for that. Do women work for extras? I think most definitely women work for extras. And I've fallen into the trap like everybody else. Something comes out and I say, oh, I'd like to have that. You know, do I need it? No, not really. But would I like to have it? Yeah. So I go through a process where I say, you need to wait about a month or 2 months. Now, if you still think you need that, then okay. But just because somebody over here has got it, don't mean you have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'd like to hear from more of the young people. They're very quiet. And I know the older guys in this have been talking a lot in the past couple of weeks. I appreciate the comments that Betsy has made and Samantha. But you grew up in a whole different era than I did. And you have a whole different perspective about what is necessary, what is necessary in your life. And I'd really like to hear from the younger people, you know, those who are.
I know for us, it's really we've worked. Our situation was I make quite a bit more than Eric does, and I work part time, but. But due to some medical problems, he can't make what he used to make. But that's a, you know, I thought that was the worst downfall and horrible thing, you know, that could have ever happened back years ago. But it actually turned into being a wonderful blessing because he's probably happier where he is now. But due to all this stuff, you know, we actually, our house wasn't that big, but we still downsized. In the house that we're in now, I remember thinking, and it does have a lot of land with it, but that was just came with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, our kids share one room. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what in the world? not, I mean, I thought, oh, this is just, what are my friends going to think? They're going to come over here. I've got two kids. And my mom laughed at me, and she said, Dawn, you know, there were four of y'all. Three brothers shared downstairs. You had a room because you were the only girl. But, you know, they'll be all right, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, and I wasn't that upset over it. But at the same time, in the back of your head, you're thinking, oh, you know, but they've got a bonus room at their house. And they've got, you know, just all four of their toys. So their house is always picked up and kept. And it's so nice because the junk is hidden back in there, you know. And my house looks like, you know, social services are going to come in it. Because if the kids play, it's a wreck, you know. But it's a constant, and I don't struggle like I used to, but I still struggle at times with thinking, if my kids, in the beginning of this, about 3 years ago, if my kids go to one of my girlfriend's house, and they see all the perks and the things and all this that they've got, and it's usually, what I found was, we're ready to go back home. And I would kind of sit back and go, well, you know, they didn't say a word about this or that, or, you know, I grew up in a huge home and on a big farm, had everything. My mother informed me last night I was a spoiled brat. Really, you think that? And she goes, yes, honey, you and all your friends, y'all are all brats. And I was like, okay.
I told you that.
I did get an old used hand-me-down my grandfather's car. I didn't get a new car or anything.
It devastated you.
A 2x4 held up the seat. No, I really didn't. I really didn't care about the car, but because when my mama and I needed her Cadillac, she let me drive it. But you know, it just—I didn't ever want for anything. But now with my kids, you know, it's totally different when you throw kids into it. You're so worried, like you were saying, you're so worried that you're not providing what makes them happy. And what I've noticed with my kids, it's so funny. Abby sat on Santa's lap with we had breakfast with Santa at Aaron and her husband's church yesterday, and he said, what do you want for Christmas? And I was kind of curious because Abby hasn't really asked for anything much for Christmas. And she said, I want a goat. And he said, you want a coat? She goes, no, a goat. And I said, and Santa turns around and looks at me like, a goat. And I said, you know, she wants a goat. And I said, well, maybe in the spring. The goats aren't born yet. You know, but we had talked about doing this. And she just has no, you know, I don't know. I've learned more from my kids than I have learned from where I'm thinking I need to provide for them. I need to listen to them a little more. Of course, I mean, like with Samantha, I homeschool my kids, so they don't get the pressures as much at school than the others. So that's, you know, that's a mixed blessing. They miss out on some, but they done on the others, but you know, I've learned really, really from them so much that what I thought was so important to them.
But contentment is an attitude. It permeates your entire life, not just your possessions.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's your time. You know, when Betsy was saying, oh, we have to, it's a self-imposed, we have to do this. When you stop and look at it, how many of those things did we really have to do? How many of those things did we feel like we were pressured into doing? How many of those things did we want to go do? I mean, we all do that. I love it when the kids say, I don't have time to do that. Let's see, you have time to play video games. I didn't have time to do my homework, but, you know, we all have the same amount of time. What do we want to do with it? And the last question you asked is the most important one. What are the blessings we're going to get from being content? That's the key. There are so many spiritual blessings because, quite honestly, without contentment, you will have no spiritual blessings. Until you are content,
there is no peace.
If there is no peace, you will not have any blessings from God because you won't accept them. What did he say? He said, be still and know that I am God. Stop running around and looking for everything because I've already given it to you. That's the key. Contentment is not about things. Paul said, in whatsoever state I am content. Listen to how many times he was shipwrecked, beaten, stoned, left for dead, and he said, in whatsoever state I am in, I'm content. We get to be tent if we want to be. Stop looking at what everybody else has, because you know what? They're not happy with what they got. I know some very wealthy people who don't have enough stuff in a 19,000 square foot house. I know some people who have a lot of money who choose to live in a 3,000 square foot house and are very happy, because it's not about the things. Matter of fact, it's what can I do with the blessings God has given me? I have too many. It's the attitude. It's not the things. There's nothing wrong with the things. God will bless you, because Solomon had more than any of us can imagine. But he started in the right place. And God gave him the rest of it. You don't hear a single person in the Bible starting out looking for things and being blessed. But every story that starts out where they go to God first, they end up being blessed. And it's really an attitude we have to develop and work on and work on and work on.
She stumbles so easy.
Oh, yeah, because we look around and we see. I mean, it's not pervasive throughout society to be content.
It took effort.
I want a bigger job. I want a bigger office. I want... It was hilarious. We were working with Bridgestone, and the Japanese came over here, and they saw the office. The CEO has the big glass office, you know. First thing they said was, won't happen in Japan. What do you mean? You wouldn't have the CEO with the office with, you know, big glass walls. Why not? Because when we give you an office with glass, that's your job. It's an insult. The company just said, your job is to look out the window. Because, you know, the prestige is the job. That you are, your worth is more important than the image. But they also have 60-year mortgages. Your grandkids pay for the house. That's how expensive they are. So, you know, the perspective here is different. We have so many things. We don't see how it is in other places. You know, just think the average income throughout the world is what? Annual income for a family worldwide, average $5,500, people. Some of us make more of that in a month. So.
Well, we are unfortunately out of time. I thought when my parents left, to look at my watch, and I thought it was like 45, and
it's actually 10 o'clock.
So, but no, I think the discussion was good this morning, and thank you for everybody for making comments. I saw, you know, out of the corner of my eye here and there, I saw like people nudging each other and whatever. So apparently, some things were valid. That, so you know, I think it's important to keep these things in mind and really pray about these things. Ask God for help with this, because I think as Americans we're just in general maybe we're spoiled. So we need to rein these things in.
Hey, one more thing I want. There's a church, I can't remember which one, in Revelation, where he talks about, you think you're rich, you've got all this stuff, but you
lay out of sale.
I don't remember which one.
I just lay out of sale.
But you know, that's a indication of sometimes we think we're rich, we think we have, but the real riches, we're poor. We're poor in those things.
Yeah, thank you for adding that. All right, I guess we're dismissed. Let's go upstairs.
Your daddy said the young people were supposed to speak, so I had to speak up.
Yeah.
I just kind of smelled it.
Are you sure?
I was like, oh yeah, it's a cardboard box. I remember playing with it. Xander's gonna have a blast because I'll go take 500 pounds of cardboard and go to the shutters or ship in.
I don't think we're going to have class next Sunday. I think there's going to be a lot of folks already in class.
Chris,
okay. I know there's going to be
a lot of church. Weekend, I say Friday night in Salt
Town. For people who are going to come up.
Yeah,
we're going out to eat with Chris.
We can. We can. Have class. We're going to be enough.
Well, I don't know what.
We can.
Not
we can.
They're going to do a regular class. And we're not allowed to hang out with Craig, so.